Have you ever wondered what are the differences between homosexual and heterosexual brains? Or is there any difference at all? Hello everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Neurobiology of Sexual Behavior. My name is Roy Simamora, and today I will try to help you answer that question. Yes, you guessed it right. I will be talking about one of the most enduring and controversial topics in the field, sexual orientation. Together, we will be exploring the prenatal neurodevelopment of sexual orientation. Then, we will investigate the neurobiological differences between homosexual and heterosexual adults. And finally, we will discuss the future directions of research in neurobiology of sexual orientation. Hopefully, by doing this, we can try to understand the importance of work in this field. So, buckle up, because you, my friend, are in for a treat. First and foremost, let's define sexual orientation, so we are all on the same page. Rahman, who nicely summarizes recent advances on neurobiology of sexual orientation, defines sexual orientation as a dispositional sexual attraction towards individuals of the opposite and or the same sex. This means sexual orientation does not cover target selection and preference mechanisms such as linguistics, descriptor, or visible sexual attractiveness. Now, what do you think that governs this dispositional attraction? To be honest, I have no one solid answer, because really, it is a question of nature versus nurture. However, as a neurobiologist, I'm inviting you to think about sexual orientation on a molecular level. So, without further ado, let's dive into biology. The prenatal androgen model suggests that heterosexual preference in men is the outcome of prenatal exposure to testosterone. In contrast, lack of this exposure causes heterosexuality in women. As Ellis and Ames pointed out in their paper, underexposure to prenatal testosterone in men and overexposure in women, so basically the other way around, increases the probability of homosexuality. In fact, Bailey et al. Pointed out that prenatal hormone manipulation in non-human model can affect sexual orientation of the offspring. Very interesting, huh? If you think the last information was interesting, wait until you hear this. These prenatal hormonal interactions has physiological impact that can become a visible proxy marker that differentiate homosexual and heterosexual. What? Turns out, there is a magic ratio between the second to the fourth finger, or commonly called 2D to 4D. In general, males' ratio is lower than females. As Rahman noted, this is related to the prenatal development in accordance to hormonal exposure. So, there is a notion that homosexual men tend to have female-like 2D to 4D ratio. In other words, homosexual men have higher 2D to 4D ratio than heterosexual men. Cool, right? And this is vice versa in female, homosexual, and heterosexual. However, this notion is still debated, and we cannot strictly use it to determine whether someone is homosexual or heterosexual. So, please don't go around and check people's fingers. Now, you may wonder, How does this hormonal effect translate to adulthood? Does hormonal experience later in life have a role in the development of sexual orientation? So, for the sake of time, I've picked two papers that I think can help us answer these questions. First, Woodson et al. Discovered that administration of testosterone to female adult rats increases the nucleus of the preoptic region in the brain. This region is known to be larger in male and contribute to male-like sexual behavior such as attraction to females. Second, Matthias et al. Suggests that oxytocin administration increases rating of attractiveness by homosexual men towards male and female faces, but the increase is greater towards male. However, this pattern is not observed in heterosexual men. Oxytocin does not have any effect on the rating towards either male or female faces. This suggests that the hormones still have impact in the neurobiology of adults and their development of sexual preference. Now, let's talk about the future direction of research in this field of neurobiology. But before that, I want to address the elephant in the room, homophobic bias. Let us not forget that historically, homosexuality has been labeled as a mental illness. I'm not saying that scientific field has not progressed since then, but I would be lying if I say that we have dismantled homophobic bias 100%. One of the reasons that I chose this topic is to address this bias. I think it is important that we need to put more effort into research on the neurobiology of sexual orientation. Understanding the development of sexual orientation has at least helped me as a queer person to embrace myself. Homosexuality, as we have seen, is a product of a biological mechanism. This being said, I do not want to undermine the role of social environment in the development of sexual orientation. In fact, I think for future research, we need to consider the demographic of our research subjects because homosexuality is heavily influenced by race, culture, religion, and other social interactions. In addition, we need to realize that sexuality is not binomial, it is a spectrum. And finally, we need to be more inclusive of trans people too. Research on these aspects of the LGBTQ+ and queerness in general needs to be explored more in the future. That's a wrap up, y'all. I hope that you learned as much as I did in the process of making this podcast. I welcome any feedback. And yeah, have a nice week and stay curious. Thank you for listening.